This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WRKF Baton Rouge and WWNO New Orleans. And we are joined by the esteemed political consultant who is a Louisiana legend and treasure, Chester James Carville. And we salute Corporal Carville, who served with distinction in the U.S. Marine Corps from 1966 to 68. And he, like other Marine Corps veterans, is celebrating the 248th birthday of the Marines today. And he's doing so not far from where he served, at least where he was stationed at Camp Pendleton in San Diego. And good morning to you, James Carville.
Well, thank you. What a nice introduction. Yeah, Tun Tavern, Philadelphia, November 10th, 1975. It kind of drill out in your head a little bit.
I bet you still know the Marine Corps hymn, don't you?
Him, blank him.
From the halls of Montezuma
to the
shores of Tripoli, we fight our country's battles with the United States Marines. James Carville, you never know where we're going to go with this, but I remember when you represented a guy named Bill Clinton, and he got blistered for being a, quote, draft dodger. And technically, he was not a draft dodger. He got a high draft number. He exposed himself to the draft. But we've got two guys who have been the last two presidents who both dodged and weaved, and one got out on probably fake bone spurs, and the other got out on probably fake asthma. And yet, do they have the moral authority to send U.S. men and women into combat when they would not fight themselves?
Well, the fact that someone has not served in the U.S. military means precisely nothing. The president's authority comes from the Constitution. And one of the big problems that we have in modern American society is that when I came up in politics in the 70s, 80s, if you looked at all around you, particularly in newsrooms, there were veterans everywhere. People kind of knew it. And we had this Tuberville insanity where he was holding up, I mean, promotions when we had forward deployments all over the world. And it never got covered right because people in a newsroom don't understand how essential the concept of command is to the military. That could have never happened 30 years ago. If you'd walk in the Washington Post newsroom, I mean, Ben Bradley was a veteran, Bob Woodward was a naval officer, John Hallwood's dad was a big military guy. Most of the people in there, a lot of them had served in the military, and they understood these issues and the gravity of it. But no, the fact that a president has not served in the military does not, his authority as commander in chief comes from the United States Constitution.
Well, Louisiana is...
No, you would...
Go ahead.
You would want to be sure that you're someone very mentally sick.
Yeah, but I've said before, if all things are even, and they rarely are, if all things are even, I'm going to take the military person over the non-military person. But I must say that I think George Bush the First, he was a war hero, no doubt about it, but I still voted for the other guy, who was not a war hero, because I didn't think all things were even. But I certainly admire the first President Bush for serving our country with distinction in war.
Yeah, I don't have any. It would be, I guess, if everything was, you know, just right and even, and I don't know how you'd judge that. But certainly I would view military service as a positive in the same way that I'd view somebody that, you know, teach for America, volunteers in service to America, or somebody's a former policeman or fireman. I mean, that would weigh in my decision to vote. Might be a physician or a school teacher. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go into making up the experience. But I mean, the fact that I walked out with two chevrons, a fire watch ribbon, a sharpshooter badge, and a bottle of discharge, and not much else, and they're hard to make. I mean, not Chesty Fuller, don't confuse me with that.
But you did it, and by virtue of going in, you exposed yourself to some bad stuff. You could have been killed. Your great friend Cyril Vedder, I know he won a Bronze Star, in Vietnam, and most people who do that don't talk about it, and he doesn't. But I commend you for your service, and unfortunately today I talked with a guy I went to high school with, and I graduated from high school in 1977. And he was telling
me, you're young.
Well, not really, but but he was telling me that he went to Texas A&M, but he was telling me that the U.S. military now, James, is largely congregated with whites from the South and black soldiers. They're fighting. Those are the fighting people for our country right now.
I think Hispanics also have a whatever the Hispanic population in the military generally runs higher than the Hispanic population in general. But the point is that the military is completely separate from American life and culture. When's the last time you went, to Rouse's and ran into somebody in uniform? That used to be a very common thing. I know when we'd go to Las Vegas, you'd always wear a uniform because the theory was, I don't know, the blackjack dealer might give you a better card. But you just ask yourself, I mean, even at LSU, you know, we had mandatory ROTC. I mean, they still have ROTC. I never see guys out marching. I mean, I haven't seen them, a cadet on a parade ground since God knows when.
But you did it. You had to shave your head, too, didn't you?
Yeah. But you didn't have a choice. it had to be 2 years, but they didn't ask you. My general point is, the military used to be an institution that was integrated into American life. You knew people when they had kids in the service, and just that is no longer the case. It's for, mostly professionally trained officers or a soldier that, they're not that many of them, and they kind of removed from society, and I think it's a shame.
Your number for James Carville is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. This is Friday Politics on WWNO and WRKF. And James Carville has conducted campaigns in, I think, around 25 countries, and he's done work in Israel. And we're going to hit internationally, nationally, and Louisiana politics with him. But what do you make of the terrible tragedy right now in Gaza and in Israel?
It's beyond comprehension. So my good friend, Prime Minister Ehud Barak, but I had him on my podcast, and he and President Clinton had a really good deal worked out. And Arafat said if he took it, he'd be dead. And he was right. But if he didn't take it, he'd be dead anyway. And so he's not just dead, but just I can determine, the Middle East is not doing it very well. If they ever have peace there, it will have to be 99% of the parameters of the deal that President Clinton and Prime Minister Barak made. Now we're in, it's a mess beyond belief. And my personal view is, why do I still looking at Bibi Netanyahu? How could this guy, after a negligence of dereliction of duty of this magnitude, how do you stay in office? I mean, when people talk about we need consequences for third graders, performance. I mean, goddamn, you just can't pass them, and they need to do better. All right, great. We don't need to have consequences for the Prime Minister of Israel that was fooling around on the West Bank when a operation unbeknownst to all of them that was highly coordinated and thought out murdered a bunch of people. How could that guy still be in office? Why would you even want to stay after you did something of that magnitude?
Well, he's not likely to take responsibility for it. But Israel's known for its intelligence, supposedly the best in the world. And you're right. Where was it?
It was right there. You got the southern, you got the ocean. That's your western border. Your southern border is the Gaza Strip. Your eastern border is the West Bank. And your northern border is kind of Syria and the Golan Heights. Well, you guys, doesn't that? You're not a very big country, and you they pay and we give them a bucket load of money for intelligence. And now, because of their negligence, we're at, and we're certainly doing the correct thing, but you can already feel the world is turned on Israel. It's turning on us. And, you know, the U.S., I think, is trying to get some humanitarian pauses here. And it ain't a sticky wicket. It's a giant mess that's going to be a long time before anybody extricates themselves from this. I promise you. And the more that you know about it, the more people you talk to, the worse it is.
Mm-hmm. And it has political implications, and we'll get James's take on that when we return after this very short pause. And for those of you holding, we will get to the phone lines in short order. So the number, there is a line open, 877-217-5757, back after this. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. I'm Jim Engster, and Robin Dow is producing. James Carville is with us, and we're going to go to the phone lines in just a moment. But before we hit the break, I was talking with Mr. Carville about what's going on in the Middle East, and in particular in Israel and in Gaza, and it has political implications. James, like many others, doesn't see a short-term solution to this, and it will likely carry over into the presidential election of next year, which is now about 51 weeks away, as will the war in Ukraine. How does that play to the American people, and will it have an impact on the election? James Carville, do we have him, Robin?
There yeah, right. I'm right here. So let me make a point. How, I don't know if this is going to happen. The country that Israel has traditionally tried everything that they to maintain, you know, kind of warm relationships with is Turkey. And now the Turkey, Erdogan, he's making noise about opening another front. Believe me, he does not want a war with Israel, but that's his streak. And that's what happens when you lose the streak massively. Leaders feel like they have to respond. And what the streets of Turkey want out of Israel, frankly, is blood. And he's going to have, and of course, the horror of Israel, and think about it, is you don't want a two-front war. You have Hamas in Gaza. You have Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hezbollah is a stronger organization than Hamas. And these people, in addition to being the military wing, they're also, you know, they provide jobs and health care and social services, and they could probably deal with that easily. When you talk about state actors getting involved here, and when we have two carrier groups in the Mediterranean Sea, and one of the things is, Jim, and our veterans, I think our Navy veterans know this, when you see a picture of the Gerald Ford, it's usually in grassy seas by itself. That's not the way these guys travel. They got an entire group. And the amount of damage that an aircraft carrier group can do is incomprehensible. But they're out there, and it's a dangerous world, and they're our guys. And you start, you know, start shooting on all sides, and not good things can happen.
James and Metairie, you're first up, James. You're on with James Carville. Hi, James.
Hey.
Jim, good morning, Mr. Carville. Happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there tomorrow, 11-11. And just to show, if I can, Jim, how despicable, totally unqualified Trump is. Back in 2015, while campaigning, Donald Trump said this about John McCain, who spent 5.5 years as a POW, much of it in solitary confinement and being tortured. He said, quote, "He's not a war hero. He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people who weren't captured." And then later on, he told Howard Stern years ago that his personal Vietnam was not contracting an STD during his wild bachelor days.
Those are true statements from Donald Trump, but they don't seem to have hurt him, James.
No, I don't. Look at what he. So thank you, James. You say Metairie, I say Metairie. but thank you. Look at what he told General Kelly. He said people served in certain were fools. All you have to do is look at the Atlantic magazine, Jeffrey Goldberg, and read the interview. Now, would a four-star retired Marine Corps general make this up? I don't think so. I really don't. And I think that is exactly the way that he feels. And when he deployed, and General Milley says, biggest mistake he ever made, he doesn't even understand the Constitution, which is the kind of basic thing. And he tried to deploy, did deploy the military against civilian protesters, and people were horrified of it. And they had a whole, they were going to be insubordinate if he had given some of these orders on January the 6th, I promise you. But thanks to that observation, James from Metairie, I don't know how to say it right. But yeah, it's a very good observation.
Well, how do you explain Trump's staying power? He's made statements, any one of which might have leveled another candidate. He got caught with a porn star. He's been indicted in four venues. How does he keep on going?
I think it's all about a reaction. I mean, of all the things he's done, the 9/11 stuff, the New York stuff, the Fulton County, the worst is the Mar-a-Lago. Because he has no defense on anything else. I thought I won the election, and I thought we could do this law. I don't know how good of a defense it is, but, you could get a decent criminal lawyer that could come up with an argument to defend him. I can't think of a defense for him in the Mar-a-Lago case. He doesn't do it. He didn't own it. He took it. They told him that he didn't own it. He kept it. They subpoenaed it. He lied to them. They asked him again. And God knows what's contained in there. You know, he was showing invasion plans to a reporter to try to make himself look good. I have no idea how anybody could consider to vote for somebody that is 99% sure a career criminal and has engaged in what I consider to be treasonous activities. Don't ask me to explain it, because I can't. And I've had people that are pro-Trump try to explain it to me, and their arguments are so vapid and shallow and stupid that all it does is just upset my stomach. I don't know. I can't. It's beyond me, I promise you.
William in Avoyelles Parish. William, you're on with James Carville. Hi, William.
Hey, William, what part of Avoyelles you from? Where in Avoyelles?
A little village called Plocheville.
All right, my mother grew up right around Cottonport in Hesper.
That's a few miles up the road, sir.
There you
with
go.
Two All Trump right. sock I was just going to go straight to the question. With two Trump sock puppets in top spots in the U.S. House of Representatives, why is there no investigation into the 2020 election?
As far as what aspect, right. there have been investigations about the insurrection, but and the election, there have been investigations about the validity.
It was
definitely valid. But what about Johnson and Scalise, two Louisianians, one and two in the majority, the Republicans and Mike Johnson? Think, James, of all the giants Louisiana has produced in Congress, Senate and House, and the one who has risen to the highest post is a guy named Mike Johnson. Pride of Benton, Louisiana, graduate of Captain Shreve, son of a firefighter, and largely unknown until a few weeks ago.
So if you go, it should be posted today, maybe over the weekend, this Politicon, Politicon. I'm posting a video explaining Mike Johnson and explaining how his Louisiana roots and his education affected him. The national coverage of this, it's typically vapid. Let me tell you, when you look at the Times or the Post or networks, there are two things that they believe fundamentally. Every expert is on the faculty of an Ivy League college, and every ordinary person is in a diner. We don't even call them diners, now you call them cafes, so that's okay. And so what happened is they sent somebody a Shreveport, and the story is they talked to seven people. And that's a real problem we have in this country. And, you know, and I know, Mike Johnson was shaped by Woody Jenkins, who they don't know us. You and I know who Woody is quite well. He was shaped by Tony Perkins. He was clearly shaped by Professor Spade at the LSU Law School. He is a young earth passionate advocate. Now, when I say he's a young earth, that means that they think God breathed earth in the earth came and men and dinosaurs walked together. And the earth only started because it says that Adam begat so-and-so, which begat so-and-so, which begat so-and-so. And they have actually done the math and determined that the earth is 6,000 years old. Now, the other thing that might, that he believes in, but all in every fiber, every part of his body, he believes in the glory of fossil fuels. Will some geologist call in and say, how could we have...
Okay, we're going to pick up with James Carville, who's revved up in California this morning. We're back with Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WWNO. More than a half century in New Orleans, and WRKF, more than 40 years in Baton Rouge. Your number, 877-217-5757. Please be brief in your remarks to James Carville, one of our favorite guests and a true Louisiana legend. Let's go to Doug in Baton Rouge. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I'm a little puzzled by, I just heard something that sounded like a John Fleming campaign commercial. But anyway, the point I was calling up to make to follow on some of Mr. Carville's remarks is that we have a crisis ahead of us. Last time, in the aftermath of the 2020 election, the majority of Republicans in the House voted not to certify Joe Biden's victory. But you had a Democratic majority and a speaker who upheld the Constitution. This time, we're not going to have those things. This time, we'll have a speaker and a majority who are determined not to do that and to help Donald Trump win. And we know this is ahead of us.
Well, if it gets down to a similar scenario, Johnson was one of 147 Republicans, and Scalise and Garrett Graves and Clay Higgins and John Kennedy, they all voted to negate the election. Are we headed for an encore, James, or will...
I'm afraid that our caller, I was listening for something to disagree with him on, but I was unable to discern a single thing that he said that is not horribly alarming and not manifestly possible. It is. It's alarming. It's possible. The fact that you went through 60 courts last year, the fact that they barely could find anything, and after all of that, and no evidence, you still had 150 or whatever it was. I wish some of these people would just get with their Constitution and spend a little time with it. You would be surprised what you would learn.
Jake and Amit. Jake, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with James Carville.
Yeah. Good morning. I wanted to say that after the terrorist attack on United States soil in 1993, the World Trade Center, and then the terrorist attack on U.S. Emissaries over in Africa, Bill Clinton didn't resign. So why should Benjamin Netanyahu, the greatest prime minister in Israel history, resign?
All right. Are those analogous?
All right. Look, yeah, with all due respect to my friend from Tarrantsboro Parish, you know how far Gaza is from the southern Israel border? Do you know how many flare-ups that they've had in that part of the world? Or do you know how many foreign embassies that we have? The idea that the Israeli southern border being breached is somehow equivalent to somebody driving a car bomb in an embassy in Kenya. I'm sorry. You have a right to call into the show, but the manifest disconnection of the two does not allow me to be overly polite in my answer.
Well,
I'm sorry.
In 9/11, Bill Clinton was not president. George Bush was.
And by the way, he was told all summer. He was told on August the 6th. Right? And that happened. It was actually on American soil, if you will, called New York City. I know some people in parts of Louisiana. Would like it not to be in the United States, but it happens to be in the United States.
Mike in Waveland, Mississippi. Mike, you're on Talk Louisiana with James Carville.
Good morning, Jim and James.
Two people that I
respect very much.
Thank
and
you.
I'm wondering if I could encourage both of you to look up the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, which was founded in 2019 by Andrew Basevich, a Vietnam War veteran whose son was killed in the Iraq War. And he and that group propose restraint when it comes to U.S. foreign policy, particularly when it comes to using the military.
All right.
Okay.
Is restraint, we're not using our own troops, but some are saying we're fighting a war by proxy in Ukraine. And that's an issue. And of course, as we know, as the Israel and Gaza conflict ensues probably into even greater levels, war may be a big issue in 2024. So, Joe Manchin, a listener, asked about
Could I respond?
Certainly.
To gentleman's observation?
Please.
I know Colonel Civics. He came and stayed at my house. He taught at my class at Tulane. And he's a brilliant guy, and he talks about, like, how we need to be modest in our objectives, and how he did lose his son. He taught at West Point, and there was something that happened that LSU did that I had mixed emotions about. All right. When we played the United States Military Academy, and by the way, my grandson's pediatrician is Dr. Jim Wayne, is a graduate of West Point, so I was glad to get him a couple of, shall we say, good tickets. But had the end zones and camouflage, and of course, you had the mandatory two ranges parachute in. But 70% of the people in that stands would have voted for Tommy Tuberville, whose activities vis-a-vis the U.S. military are borderline treasonous. And Colonel Basevich is like, we roll out some quadriplegic on second base and we all cheer. And then we go about our business. And he's a very bright man. You should look up the Quincy Institute. You should read about him. He speaks very eloquently on the limits of power. And of course, he thought that the Iraq stupidity was what it was real, real stupidity. But I'm glad that the gentleman from Waveland, Hancock County, Mississippi, called in. And it's a good tip for your people.
Thank you. What about Joe Manchin? What does this mean?
He's a friend of mine, right? He couldn't win in West Virginia. A Democrat for president has not carried a single county in West Virginia.
In a long time.
Zip. Since 2008.
Since when?
Since 2008. 2008.
I know, but to put it in perspective, in 1988, it was one of 10 states that went for Dukakis. What the heck happened? What happened?
Well, California went for Bush. New Jersey went
for
Bush.
First time. First time.
Right. And then that, there's shifting demographics in the United States. And there are places in Louisiana that voted, for 1980 Dukakis. Democrats don't get any vote. But whatsoever Democrats have lost, have gained. And by the way, in the last 7 presidential elections, the Democrats have lost a popular vote once. That's for a fact. But they've been changing demographics.
They won 7 of 8.
Seven of eight,
yes. And the other the other one was close, as you remember, Bush and Kerry.
Very close, 04, yeah.
And remember, didn't they have same-sex marriage on the ballot in about 5 swing states?
They did it in Ohio. They all laughed. It was done. Now, you don't remember the same-sex marriage. Both Hillary and Obama were against same-sex marriage in 2008. Now, who even thinks about it? I mean, other than Mike Johnson, who is totally obsessed with, well, he was going to open that law school at Louisiana Christian, the Paul Pressler College of Law. Mm-hmm. Look up Paul Pressler, right? He's got like 8 underage people accusing him. Look up Denny Hassert. He was the longest Republican speaker. You know, for a political movement that's so obsessed with homosexuals, they sure seem to have that.
Well, Kevin in North, I think we better segue before we both get in trouble. Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Right. Kevin, good morning. Yeah. You're on with James Carville.
Yes, hey, I would say what's going on in Gaza reminds me of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the Native Americans. I remember Kid Bull, Crazy Horse, and all of them was considered terrorists.
All right, you're talking about the Tulsa massacre, and also, of course, in 1995, there was the tragedy in Oklahoma City, and you know, I thought that was a turning point for Clinton's presidency, the way he handled that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. And please don't, I mean, not that I'm proud of it, but history is history. And look up the Colfax massacre.
In Louisiana.
In Louisiana. In Oklahoma, they had the Tulsa massacre. They had the Osage Nation massacre. They seem to be a state that historically has been into massacring people, which let me state, I don't think is a very good idea. Now, guys, I want to make one point, Jim, that Simon Sebag Montefiore made in The Atlantic. When you see these college students, who I don't think are terribly well-educated, you know, somebody's colonialism, it's anything but colonialism. That's not what the situation in Gaza is. I think it's horrific. It was all the problem. But the real problem, and Ehud would tell you this, it was these settlements on the West Bank are just a blight on the reputation of Israel. They should have never had them. And, of course, now that's just another thing that adds to the pot. And President Clinton had it all figured out. They were going to let them keep some of the more populated settlements and give the Palestinians more land. It's the only way you can do it. Again, that's the way that any deal, and Ehud says that, any deal that they ever make, if peace ever comes to the Middle East, I don't know when it is, not my lifetime, it will be on those parameters.
877-217-5757. We'll spend a few more minutes with Chester James Carville. By the way, belated happy birthday to James Carville.
Thank you.
And he's still running regularly, and he'll be with us, I think, for a long, long time to come, and he'll be with us for a few more minutes. So we'll be back, and if you're hanging on, we'll get to as many of you as possible. Don't go away. We're back after this quick timeout on Talk Louisiana. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. We round the corner and head for home with James Carville. A few more minutes, and if you're so inclined, you might be able to get in if you give Robin Dow a call at 877-217-5757. Troy Hebert, the veteran Louisiana politico who's going to be with us for a few minutes this hour, has decided to step aside. We'll put him on Tuesday. He's listening with Ernest and enjoying James Carville and said, I think you ought to stick with James for a few more minutes. So that's what we'll do if James is a game, and I think he is. Quickly, some listeners online ask about the abortion issue, which, of course, played mightily in some races this week, and it helped Democrats, apparently, in places like Ohio and in Kentucky, where the governor got reelected, a Democrat in a ruby red state. Your thoughts, James?
So I have some thoughts. First of all, the pro-life movement, as we know it in the United States, has thrown the towel in. They're trying to negotiate a surrender. So when Glenn Youngkin, so he was going to be the donors, he was going to Iowa after he, you know, took over the Virginia legislature, which, of course, he did no such thing. And he said, look, the new position and the pro-life people endorsed it is out, you have to wait 15 weeks, but even after 15 weeks, it's eligible for, you're eligible for exceptions. So what the bro said is that you had unfettered access in the first trimester. Well, 15 weeks is 3 weeks more than the first trimester. And the position of the pro-life movement, there's always been no exceptions, and why should defeatists suffer because of whatever. So they're trying, they're basically trying to negotiate an end to this. And the public doesn't believe them. And I was involved in Kansas. Now, I'm just going to be very clear. At the end, the Catholic Church put up a lot of money to try to confuse people as to which way you voted. It was a no vote or yes vote. Actually, they wanted you to vote yes, but they sort of lied and they tried to put the date when there were no other primaries, when they figured there would only be Republicans voted. They did the same thing in Ohio. Frank LaRose, a great liar. And whenever you try to scheme something against the public, it blows up in your face because the whole thing is based in dishonesty. And they try to rig the election, rig the rules, rig the wording, confuse and obfuscate. That's the entire strategy. And they got caught, and now no one is interested in taking their surrender.
John in Baton Rouge. John, you're on with James Carville. Good morning, sir.
James, has your wife been called a rhino recently? And also, I just wanted to say that with y'all stirring rendition of the Halls of Montezuma, that Harry Connick has nothing on you guys.
All right. Thank you.
I reluctantly speak for my wife, but I think she's not a non-Republican. I think she's a libertarian. But I've learned after 30 years of marriage, which will be this Thanksgiving, to never tell people what she thinks or who she is, because, well, if you got a wife and you did that, you know where this is going to end up, and not a good place. But I don't think they're Colorado, because I don't think she's any longer a registered Republican.
Is it fair to say that when the two of you were working against each other in the 92 presidential campaign, Bush versus Clinton, both parties have gone directions that maybe both of you are somewhat uncomfortable with?
Well, this is the basic argument, Jeff. Okay, the Republicans have their crazy people. I'll admit that. But you got to admit the Democrats have their crazies. First of all, only 11% of the self-described Democrats describe themselves as progressive liberal, all right? Where it can fairly be termed what I call the identity left, which I think is a profoundly silly movement, calling people birthing people or Latinx or whatever. It's the thing that overeducated whites think of. About two-thirds of their party, doesn't believe in elections. Half of them don't believe in evolution. I mean, come on, being a little out there trying to change dictionaries or whatever these silly people are doing is a lot less egregious than storming the goddamn Capitol, of which they did, in which a huge number of self-described Republicans in this country think they did nothing wrong. So, yes, and there are parts of the Democratic Party that irritate me. Some of them are so silly, I find them almost amusing. I do not find storming the Capitol, it's a little more irritating, and it's certainly not amusing. Or trying to teach children that the Earth is 6,000 years old is just dumber than concrete. That's what I think.
Well, we just had an election in Louisiana for governor in which 36, a little less than 36% of the voters participated. And to put it in perspective, in 2020, when Trump and Biden were on the ballot in a race that everybody knew in Louisiana, Trump would win here, and he did by 400,000 votes. It was double the turnout. How do you explain that?
Well, first of all, I was kind of watching the TV, and Jeff Landry just, they ran a really aggressive campaign. I'm not a Jeff Landry person, vote for him, but when I'm watching someone practice a craft at some level of me, if I'm a carpenter, they got a good carpenter. The Louisiana Democratic Party is obviously somewhere between you know, pathetic or non-existent. You know, where hopefully we can figure something out here. And the only place that Democrats have lost elections since Dobbs, Mississippi and Louisiana. Every other place we went. And we have to do something about black turnout. Democrats do. And of course, Sean didn't get much of a turnout at all. But we haven't been getting robust black turnout anywhere in a while. And I try to talk to other people in the business about it, and they're kind of scared to talk about it because, well, I don't know. You think we should say that we have low black turnout? Yeah, we should say we have low black turnout because we can't win without high black turnout. And it's so stupid how paranoid people have gotten about having a very frank and necessary conversation. Well, we should try to find out why.
Yeah, and there are 1 million black voters in Louisiana, and Jeff Landry.
Third highest.
Yeah, Landry won the election with 547,000 votes, so you can see how if turnout were high, it'd be a different story. Patricia in Magnolia Woods in the Baton Rouge area. Patricia, please be brief. You're on with James.
Good morning. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm is coming to Louisiana soon to promote the microgrid that the Biden administration is going to help build in Louisiana, solar and batteries, to help people have sources of electricity after a hurricane. And I'm wondering, why don't we hear more about things like that?
All right. That's a good point from Patricia.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Yeah. So that's the extra point. Governor Granholm is a really close friend of mine. We worked together at American Bridge, which, by the way, is run by a Baton Rougean named Bradley Bayshock.
Yep.
Sharp guy. Yes, there's a ton of those kinds of things that are coming up in Louisiana. I think Texas produces more wind energy than any state in the country. And, South Louisiana, of course, given the land loss, I think all of this is still a big part of where we're going. But these kind of projects, and I know a guy like who works in solar, and they're very excited about doing things like off of Cameron Parish and places like that. So that's a very good point. And when the secretary comes to Louisiana, I hope somebody like shows what's going on with the river, because it's really having an adverse effect on commerce. And I was reading like the Wall Street Journal, how low the river is and how hard it is to get goods out of the center of the country. I know we deal with saltwater intrusion, but this climate is so bad, it's sickening. And we're at Louisiana is the probably most climate affected place, I know it is, in the United States. But, meanwhile, the Speaker of the House believes Earth is 6,000 years old and is all a Chinese hoax.
Okay, a final caller. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get to all of you, but I hope James will be back soon. I think he will. Roberto in Mid-City, Baton Rouge. Hi, Roberto. You're on with James.
Good morning, James and Jen. My question had to do, I'm not sure if y'all addressed it earlier, I didn't listen to the earlier show, but about your thoughts on the Democratic Congressman from Minnesota, Dean Phillips, and pulling ahead possibly. Everything I heard from him sounded pretty good to me. Thank you.
All right. James?
I think that he's doing the country a service. I'm 79. And what I tell people is, my estimation is about 334 million people live in the United States. It seems to me we could be able to vote for somebody under 75. All right? And I think I like President Biden. I think he's done an admirable job, much better than people give him credit for. But I think Dean Phillips' presence is important because some people are frustrated by us. And the way that you relieve frustration in the democracy is you vote.
Okay, James, unfortunately, we got to go, but thank you for spending the full hour with us. It is always a pleasure. We'll be back next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay tuned.